Hi.
Sorry, I like our music.
Are you always jamming out or what?
I'm always jamming out. Hi, guys. Welcome to History of a Haunting. We are back with a brand new episode this week. I am one of your hosts, Carrie Hopper.
And I'm your other host, Laura.
In case you can't read the names below our picture.
Just in case.
Just in case. How are you? What'd you do today?
I'm good. Signed dogs for my house today, as you know.
Yay! And that's the house located at exactly 43. Okay.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
It's yay. Yours. Excited?
I am a little bit stressed about moving since I have packed literally nothing.
Great.
So, you know. I'm on top of it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. And I only sent you more stuff today.
Great. It's perfect. That fits in with my problem that I want to buy stuff for my new house now. So I actually added more shit to my house to move into my new house.
So well, I wanted to be a part of that. So I sent you some stuff today. what else is going on?
Not too much.
How are the kittens?
I got tickets to the Doobie Brothers tomorrow.
Ooh, ooh. Oh, shit, that's right.
Gonna get my 70s jam on.
That's right. Where are they at again?
Desert Sky. Oh. Or whatever they call it now, I don't know.
It's always Blockbuster, Desert Sky.
That's what they always say. It's always gonna be that.
It's always gonna be that. How's Zaniac?
Intense. But he's very excited. Well, he was off half the week.
Oh, that's right.
Still on his fall break. So
Great.
He had a great time. You know, took the kids to Magic Mountain. That was super fun for my niece's birthday.
Ah, yes. My BFF.
So they had a great time. So I have zero money left, of course, because
I mean, places. I don't, I've never been.
Parks are wicked expensive.
I've never been to Magic Mountain, so I don't know how expensive it is compared to Disneyland. Is it about?
I think the tickets are cheaper, but once you're in the park, I think they're all pretty much the same.
Probably.
Like everything just costs an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
But the kids had a great time, so it was a lot of fun.
That's good. Was it all Halloween-y decorated?
It was. So that was really fun. And they had, like at night, they do like a whole zombie takeover kind of thing. So they have like little mini haunted houses all over, and then you know all these actors and they come and spook, you know, scare you and stuff. The kids, especially my niece, she's into all that stuff, so she was loving it.
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful birthday present then.
Yeah, I thought so.
Wonderful.
Happy birthday, Mac.
Happy birthday, Mac. Well, alrighty. How are the kittens?
They're wonderful.
Yeah,
actually, they are. They've been really.
Are they?
I mean, I have them
pregnant with their own litters by now. Are they pregnant with their own litters by now that you've had
I have to tuck them away in a room because otherwise they'll jump on the green screen and knock it over. Kittens being kittens.
Sounds about right. I'm sure it's not Carrie. I'm sure it's probably just Nancy.
It is Nancy, actually, most of the time.
All right, well, now that we've just swallowed in everybody's ears. Sorry, guys. We didn't mean to do that. I'm good. Like I said, I sent you some stuff, but you know what it is. It's not a surprise. We'll just jump right into our EVPs. So our hoodies came in. I'm not going to take it off. Yay. I knew it looked. Look, check it out. Our hoodies came in.
a little.
Wrong, not the right kind of channel.
Only fans.
Check me out. See? Can you see?
They're awesome. I can see them. Yeah, they're awesome.
Yes. So those came in the other day, and I got them all sent out to everybody who ordered. And everybody who ordered, thank you guys so very much. We are so glad that you are so excited for the podcast and you want some merch and you want a hoodie. It is getting colder in certain parts of the world. It was 86 here in Raleigh today, so not really what I thought fall back east was going to be, but
that's about what it was here.
Yeah. 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 Well,
it's been kind of, I mean, it's starting to finally, it's cooled off here. So it's nice.
Yeah.
It's been pretty nice.
It has. You guys have actually had a much more wet summer than Phoenix has had in a long, long time. And you didn't have that many days like over 110, over 115. It was kind of a mild summer for you as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess by Phoenix standards, it was still hot.
By Phoenix standards, but yeah.
All the time. So,
yeah.
By my standard, it's way too fucking
hot. It was utter garbage. So, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, I did that today. I was feeling like crap yesterday, so I really didn't do a whole hell of a lot yesterday. I barely moved yesterday. And then, you know, I've been traveling a lot since I got here. You know, we went to College Hill in July. I went to see Jennifer and the family July 4th weekend. Then you came out and we went to College Hill. Then the beginning of August, I went back to Pittsburgh to stay with my niece while her parents were in New York. And then I did Trans-Allegheny at the end of August, and then the very next weekend, Koi and I went back to Pittsburgh for Emma's birthday, and then I think, yeah, and then I was home for 3 weeks, and then we went to Colorado for the 100th episode event, and I've been home for 2 weeks, and then this next weekend, I go back to Pittsburgh, because it's senior night, and then I put the lid on my driving to Pittsburgh for the season because I am not trying to drive to Pittsburgh in the snow. And Pennsylvania always gets crazy snow.
It does.
And then, so yeah, my trips are done after next weekend until I fly back to Phoenix for our investigation event for the podcast at the beginning of December.
And well, then that'll be fun.
Yeah, so I've been traveling a lot. I haven't gotten a lot done around the house here that I would like to do because when I'm home, then I have, like, cleaning and, you know, you mow the grass and do all this stuff. And Koi and I wanted to plant a tree for his grandfather, and I wanted to dig a fire pit in the backyard. So there's a lot of stuff that we still have to do as far as, like, making the home our own. But all that's had to be tabled because I just can't stop traveling.
I hear you, sister.
Yeah.
My schedule's, like, pretty full for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I go somewhere at least once a month, if not twice, every month from now. I think I have January off.
That's what I was so like. Far. I think I have January, the whole month off, yeah.
Right, I don't think I'm going anywhere in January, but, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to Europe in December. We have the jail event.
We have the jail event. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
Yeah.
Plus moving. Yeah. Then February we have Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
And then March I think I have to go back to Austin. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so my team and I Southern Entities, we are not picking our investigations back up until spring of next year.
So I think you're trying to get through all your evidence, maybe. That you already have. One of these days.
That's how I'm spending my holidays, you guys.
There you go.
With evidence. I have so much of it. I have so much of it all the way back to Myrtle's plantation when I drove out here in March. Wow. I have that. I have Eastern State. I have so much. But anyway, so that's what's been going on with me. One more trip, and then I can kind of chill until I fly to Phoenix. But that one's a quick in and out, Friday to Sunday. That's not really. And I don't have to sit and drive. With stopping, it's like an 8-hour drive from here to Jennifer's one way. Right. So it's like, yeah, I stockpile up on my podcast so I can listen to them, and it makes it quick. And I've made the drive so much now that it's like nothing. But still, it's, I'm 44, man. Unfold me out of a car after 2 hours and it's like pop, crack. Oh, God, I can't. Like, it's bad. It's just not great. No. So anyway, yeah, hoodies. We've got custom soaps that we're selling now. And we're just about sold out of the Aho soaps. Those were really popular. Which is really great, but now I'm like, oh, maybe I need to make more of those. They were really pretty. They were like copper and cactus green and What other color did I use? I can't remember. But it was scented in cactus flower, which was really, really beautiful smell. It was so clean and
nice.
Yeah, so we're just about out of those. Putting the Winchester Mystery soaps on the site this weekend. Those are really cool. They're scented in honeysuckle, which is a really beautiful smell. I just don't particularly like honeysuckle, which is unfortunate because the entire podcast office smells like honeysuckle right now. And we've got our drawstring bags, we've got our koozies, and we're going to be doing another pre-sale order event for more hoodies, because we've got had a lot of people that were like, oh, I want one, and we're like, well, we closed that a little less than a month ago, so they missed out on the first round, so we're gonna do another round, guys. And maybe run that through, I don't know, Laura, what do you think? Through Thanksgiving?
Order? Yeah, that sounds about right. Maybe we can get them out in time for Christmas. That may be cutting it close. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of time to be wearing hoodies, even. Like, I like to think about when is appropriate to be wearing a hoodie based on Arizona weather, just because that's just what's so ingrained in my head. And yeah, you'll still be able to wear a hoodie in Arizona through March, at least. So
yeah, usually.
So. We can get them sent out, but, you know, with the holiday shipping and all of that, you know, maybe we'll...
Oh, yeah. Everybody's already talking about delays.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see how that goes.
We'll see how that goes. So we'll see. We'll definitely do it again, but I don't know, we'll maybe run it through Thanksgiving. It's a perfect Christmas gift to buy the podcast lover in your family.
Exactly. They'll love it.
They will love it. Yes, absolutely. So today, guys, we are going to cover another possession case. And it's an odd one. It's a bit of an odd one. I typically don't like the possession stories. This is different. It's an old-timey one. It's a little different. And I'm sorry, Laura, did you have any other EVPs? Anything that we needed to cover?
No, I think we covered just about everything going on in my life.
Okay. All right.
It's not
good.
That exciting.
Okay. Good. She's also drinking White Monster. So today, guys, the story that we're covering is the Great Amherst Mystery. Now, Laura, have you ever heard of this one?
No, I have not.
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay. We don't have any backgrounds this week, guys, simply because, well, I forgot to create any. So, blue screens. Yay. It's again one of those tag team situations where the history and the hauntings kind of go hand in hand with each other. So Laura is going to kick the show off and she's going to tell the first half of the story. So Laura, anytime you're ready.
All right. So this is the Great Amherst Mystery, as Carrie said. So the sources for this story are mysteriesofcanada.com, wikipedia.com, goodreads.com.
And that's it.
All right. That's
it. You're so used to like 900 sources that you were like, oh, I guess that was it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's just not enough for me. No, that's good. All right. So the activity in this case revolved around a 14-year-old girl named Esther Cox. At that time, Esther lived in the aforementioned, we haven't mentioned it yet, but with her eldest sister, Olive, who ran the household. Olive's husband, Daniel Teed, who owned the cottage. Olive and Dan's two young boys, Willie and George, aged 5 and 1, respectively. Dan's brother, John, Esther and Olive's brother, William, and the Cox's sibling, 22-year-old sister, Jane. Esther Cox was said to be a strange girl, exceptionally moody, and unusually fond of pickles. I think we've found the culprit right away. Close it on up.
All right. I mean, hey, it's done.
Hey,
mystery solved. Another classic.
Bad pickling juice.
Another classic debunking by History of Haunting. Right.
So she had been a tiny baby weighing only 5 pounds at 9 months. Wow.
That is
exceptionally small.
That is.
Her mother died when she was 3 weeks old, and her father subsequently remarried and moved to Maine, leaving her in the care of her grandmother. Under her grandmother's influence, oops, I just lost my place so much. Stupid computer.
I used to do that when I was when you would have my notes on my iPad. I'd accidentally hit something and it would scroll all the way down, or and I'm like, oh no.
That's exactly what just happened. I'm all, it's not working. All right, so sorry about that. And so, under her grandmother's influence, Esther grew up to be an oddly serious and old-fashioned girl. On the character of Esther Cox, one acquaintance wrote, "Esther's disposition is naturally mild and gentle. She can, at times, however, be very self-willed and is bound to have her own way when her mind is made up. If asked to do anything she does not feel like doing, she becomes very sulky and has to be humored at times to keep peace in the family. However, all things considered, she is a good little girl and has always borne a good reputation in every sense of the word."
I mean, I could have been her. Maybe okay. I am.
Minus the
maybe I was. Oh, also, last EVP, we're looking for a new host, a new co-host for History of the Haunting. This is going to be Laura's last episode. I'm kidding, you guys. I'm kidding. They're going to be like, God damn, there's a revolving door host in that show. Right. The fuck, Carrie?
What the fuck is wrong with Carrie?
Basically. Don't pull up that thread, listeners.
Right. Don't. So one afternoon in the summer of 1878, a young man named Bob McNeil, a subordinate coworker of Daniel Teed's to whom Esther took a fancy, invited Esther to take a ride with him in his carriage. McNeil drove Esther to a wooded area in the country, withdrew a revolver from his pocket, and ordered the girl to get out of the carriage, evidently intending they would have sex. Esther refused and was saved at the last moment when the noise of an approaching buggy rumbled in the distance. Wheeling the carriage around, McNeil brought Esther back to the Teed cottage, where she cried herself to sleep. In certain versions of the story, this man is said to be her boyfriend, but since she was only 14, it's thought to be less likely that...
Yeah, so
it was, yeah.
Probably the version you just said is probably more accurate.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So in the following days, Esther's distress was evident to her family members. Olive and company assumed that Esther and Bob McNeil had simply quarreled on their outing, and not being particularly fond of Bob and glad of his absence from the cottage, because before then, for several months, he was hanging around all the time. Mm. So they decided not to, bug her too much about it. On the eve of September 4th, 1878, Esther and her sister Jane, who shared a bed and bedroom, were just settling down for the night when Jane felt what she thought to be a mouse crawling inside her mattress.
Gross.
Frightened, the girls lit the lamp and searched for the mouse, but were unable to find it. Later that night, the sisters heard rustling beneath the bed and determined that it was coming from a cardboard box filled with pieces of patchwork. When they dragged the box out into the middle of the room, it jumped a foot in the air and landed on its side.
The box did, or the mouse? Oh, sorry.
The box.
The box did. Okay.
The girls screamed for Dan, who came to the rescue, heard their incredible story, laughed and remarked that they must have been dreaming, and pushed the box back under the bed before heading to sleep. The following evening, Esther, who had gone to bed early on account of a fever, sprang from her bed in the middle of the night and cried, "Wake up, Jane, I'm dying."
I feel like that often. Often when I have a fever, I feel like I'm dying.
Yeah, I'm the worst sick person ever.
I am too.
So terrible.
Yesterday.
Like, I'm the biggest baby.
Yeah.
I cry all the time and watch terrible TV. I cry all the time.
Yeah, I am whiny.
Sorry for myself.
1,000%. Yeah.
It's the worst.
It is. Mm. And I want my mother all the time. I'm always like, Mommy. I don't feel good, Bobby. Right.
I just want somebody to take care of me.
Yeah.
Help me. Jane woke up, lit the lamp, and to her horror found that her sister's face was blood red, her eyes bulging in terror as she trembled in her nightgown. Jane called for assistance and was soon joined by Dan and Olive.
Okay, I don't look William like that.
And when Dan's I'm... brother John. Not knowing what else to do, Olive helped her younger sister get back into bed, whereupon all the color drained from Esther's face. In a choking voice, Esther declared, "I am swelling up and shall certainly burst. I know I shall." Indeed, Esther's hands and feet were alarmingly swollen. Her complex now was deathly pale, where moments earlier it had been beet red, and her skin was burning with fever. where moments earlier had been icy cold. While Esther, her body steadily swelling, writhed in pain on the bed, a tremendous sound like a clap of thunder sounded in the room. Shortly thereafter, three loud cracks sounded beneath the bed, and Esther suddenly went limp, her appearance having returned to normal. When they satisfied themselves that Esther was not dead, but had somehow spontaneously fallen asleep, her bewildered family members eventually returned to their own beds. The following morning, Esther seemed reasonably well, although her appetite was greatly diminished. Her family members, being unable to explain the bizarre incident of the previous night, decided to keep the matter to themselves. Four nights later, Esther had a similar attack. This time, all the bed sheets flew off her and her sister and landed in the corner of the room as if they had been ripped off by invisible hands. Jane, who had been awake to witness the spectacle, fainted from fright. Hearing Esther's screams, Olive, Dan, William, and John rushed into the bedroom. I feel like I'm doing like Little House on the Prairie.
I am loving the way you're telling this story. Rushed to her sister's bed. Like, you're so, like, it's perfect.
Well, thanks.
Also, this is Little House on the Prairie. I didn't come
up. Really, like, there's so many people.
There are.
Seeing the bed sheets lying in the corner of the room, Olive gathered them together and placed them over her ailing sisters. Almost immediately, the sheets flew back into the corner of the room in the same manner as before. Before anyone had time to react, the pillow upon which Esther's head lay hurtled through the air and struck John Teed in the face. I mean, don't we all want to hit John Teed?
I mean, he was one of my least favorite characters on the prairie.
Right? Mm-hmm. So annoying. Not knowing what else to do, all the family members, aside from John, who fled the room in fear, sat on the edge of the bed in order to keep the sheets from flying off again. Oh, after shit. A succession of incredibly loud knocks sounded from beneath the bed, Esther's swelling subsided and she fell into a peaceful sleep.
Maybe this girl just has a hard time falling asleep. She's, you know how sometimes you get uncomfortable, you toss and turn? Like, maybe that's all that's happening here. Because she does seem to, you know, conk out pretty severely. Not severely, but pretty well. Sleep through the night. Mm. Maybe she's just uncomfortable.
Maybe.
Maybe it's just too hot there in that cottage.
Maybe she's just super dramatic.
Maybe she's just super dramatic.
The following day, the family decided to call the local doctor. When Dan Teed informed the physician of what had transpired, the doctor laughed and assured him that no such nonsense would occur while he stayed in the house, which he intended to do that night until 1 a.m.
Wow.
Sounds like okay. A party. The doctor arrived at the Teed house at 10 that night. He immediately examined Esther, who had already been in bed for an hour, and deduced that she had suffered a tremendous shock of some kind. As he spoke,
Esther's I could have been a doctor back then.
Right, me too. Yeah, just prescribe some opium. That's what everyone needs.
You should probably do cocaine about this.
100%. When you get tired, just have some cocaine. When you need to sleep, have some laudanum. All right. As he spoke, Esther's pillow moved laterally until only one corner was tucked beneath the girl's head. The doctor watched in amazement as the pillow returned to its former position without any external assistance. "Did you see that?" the doctor exclaimed. "It went back again." "So it did," replied John Teed. "But if it moves out again, it will not go back, for I intend to hold on to it, even if it did bang me over the head last night."
I imagine the pillows back then were probably pretty hard and firm. I can't imagine they were soft. Well,
probably, you know, like down or something, you know.
No, bang me over the head last night. Wow, he gets hurt by a pillow.
Right. No sooner had he said this than the pillow moved laterally again, as if to challenge the young man. Though John gripped it with all his might, the pillow subsequently slid back under Esther's head as if it had encountered no resistance at all. John's hair stood on end. Shortly thereafter, loud knocks sounded from beneath the bed. Although the doctor examined the area from which the sounds had originated, he wasn't able to determine their source. He proceeded to walk about the room, and the knocking followed him, sounding from the floor beneath him. After about a minute of knocking, the bed sheets once again flew into the corner of the room.
I'm sorry, I thought I was going to sneeze. I'm trying so hard. I'm like, do I drop to the floor? What do I do? Or maybe I just sneeze.
Just let it go.
Sorry.
It's okay. Are you ready? You need a minute?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. Immediately, a scratching sound emanated from the wall behind the bed. When everyone in the room looked to ascertain the source of the noise, they saw that a disturbing message had been carved into the wall. Esther Cox, you are mine to kill. For 3 weeks, the strange activity increased in both frequency and intensity. Esther's invisible tormentor pelted her with objects like potatoes and wooden planks, often in the presence of her family members, and made violent banging noise all throughout the house. The potato thing, when I read that, I was laughing my ass off, and I'm sorry.
Were they hitting potatoes at her with the wooden planks?
Potato hits you in the face. It's kind of fucking funny. Sorry.
Maybe they were practicing baseball, and it was just like, take a wooden plank and a potato.
Right. Just go ahead.
You know what this is, in all seriousness, what this is reminding me of? It's reminding me of the, I forget the name of the girls, the sisters who started spiritualism and the knocking, yes, and she was using the knuckles of her toes.
I literally thought the same thing when I was reading this.
Did you?
But the way that they sound, like, it's so, so loud that it would have to be more than just cracking of knuckles.
Yeah.
But I honestly immediately thought the exact same thing,
yeah,
that it correlated to our episode on the spiritualism in the two ladies in, yeah, their...
Were they the Fox sisters?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cox and Fox. Remembered. Oh, hey. Maybe.
Good job.
Maybe. You know what? I'm not going to say it because I know how the story goes, and we'll ponder my idea at the end.
Sorry. Okay, sounds good. All right. The doctor who prescribed morphine to Esther to calm her shattered nerves went outside during one of these banging sessions and noted that from the street, it sounded as if someone was standing on the cottage roof and pounding on the shingles with a sledgehammer. So that kind of was why I was like, you know, it's definitely not somebody cracking their knuckles.
True. Well, let's take a look at this cottage, shall we?
Yeah, that's, I mean...
Let's hope that this is the picture of the cottage.
All right.
Hey! This is
you
the...
You did it.
Yes, this is the tiny little house that it happened in.
Awesome.
I don't know. Is it... Did you say it was metal shingles?
No, they said with a sledgehammer on the shingles with a sledgehammer.
Mm, okay.
Not like a tin.
You would think... Meh. Anyway, that's the house.
That's the house.
That's it.
All right. So, one night in late September during another knocking session, Esther had a seizure in her bed and became cold and rigid. In this alarming state, she told her family members, who were in the room with her, about the traumatic incident which had occurred between her and Bob McNeil, an incident of which none of them yet had any knowledge. When Esther recovered, her family members told her what she had said. Although Esther had no recollection of making the confession, she tearfully admitted that the story was true. Shortly after this incident, Jane observed that the mysterious knocking often seemed to correspond with things that they had said, as if the invisible agent that made the sounds could hear and understand them.
Not creepy decided, at all.
No, not at all. Dan decided to test this theory and asked the mysterious force to knock once for every person in the room. Sure enough, the entity responded with the correct number of raps, each of which were violent enough to shake the entire house.
Okay, yeah, that's not knuckles on the floor. If no, it were, no, my not. God.
You're right. You have really bad arthritis.
Or there's a gorilla hiding in the house.
There's something. Over the next 3 weeks, the family developed a method by which to communicate with the mysterious entity, which harassed them at random. In response to their closed-ended questions, the presence would knock once for a negative answer, thrice for an answer in the affirmative, and give two knocks when in doubt about a reply. I like that sometimes he just doesn't know.
I'm not sure. I would, as a ghost, and I was playing this game, I'd fuck it up. I'd be like, wait, was it once for yes and two for no? Was it three for, I'm not sure. What was, I can't remember.
Right. I can't remember passwords for shit I use all the time, day in and day out. So, yes, I absolutely would forget.
I am not going to remember not.
Be number two. Mm-hmm.
All the time, yeah. I don't know. Choose your own adventure is what I always said when I was alive.
Right. So, throughout October, the Teed House was visited by several clergymen of different denominations who had heard of the strange activity and hoped to see it with their own eyes. A well-educated Baptist minister came away from the house convinced that neither Esther nor her family members were responsible for the manifestations. Instead, he theorized that the shock resultant of the Bob McNeil incident turned Esther into a sort of electric battery, and that Esther emitted invisible flashes of lightning, which caused small thunderclaps. I like that this is the well-educated person that has now believes that she is basically farting lightning and making small thunderclaps. Because it's a good one. Another man of the cloth, this one a Wesleyan Methodist preacher, witnessed several manifestations at the Teed home. The most startling of these involved cold water in a bucket, which while standing on the kitchen table began to bubble and froth as if it were boiling.
I have no scientific explanation for that.
Oh, yeah, me neither, Bob. I mean, we do... I mean, maybe she really is just full of lightning. Maybe she has gas. I mean, we don't know.
What was she eating?
Right? Let's talk about her diet, Terry.
Let's talk about her diet. Maybe there's a something going on there. Oh, my God. Okay.
Maybe she has celiac. I mean, we don't know. Maybe she's irritable bowel syndrome. It could just be IBS.
Do you have any idea how many...
With gas.
How many diseases there were that people didn't know about until, you know, exactly. Now. Nowadays.
Totally be that. 100% be that.
Also, we
solved it. Yet again, it's all those fucking pickles.
It was the pickles.
It's the fucking pickles, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Speaking you can... there is such a thing as over-fermentation, folks.
There is.
Cheers.
Carrie's working on it right now.
Okay. So that's the first half of the story. I have the second half of the story, and I'm going to bring that to you right after these messages from our sponsor that we don't have. If you want to sponsor us, let us know, but we will be right back. It'll be just a blip of time for you fine folks. Okay, guys, we're back. So come to find out, there was a rash of pickle poisonings in this town. I'm kidding.
No, shut up.
You're like, no. I fucking knew it.
No, everything.
So by the end of the month, folks were flocking to the Teed family home from all over the region, eager to witness the manifestations. Some came away believing the whole thing to be a hoax. Others thought that Esther was somehow hypnotizing people in order to make them see and hear what she wanted them to. That's a pretty powerful hypnotist, though, I think.
Right.
And wasn't she? She was like 14.
Right.
So anyway.
Unlikely.
Yeah. So most people, however, did leave with the unsettling conviction that the manifestations were genuine. They did continue with casual frequency, you know, the knocking, the thunderclaps, the lightning, sure. All of it very casual. It was a wild time on the prairie.
Right? For real. Everything's fine.
It's fine. So they continued with casual frequency until December when Esther contracted diphtheria. So during the 2 weeks it took for her to recover from her illness, the manifestations ceased entirely.
Upon this bitch has the worst luck. For fucking real. Like, I'm sorry.
This is the
tip. With potatoes. Held at gunpoint.
Pickle farts. I mean,
yeah, like, what the actual fuck?
It's the tip. It's the tip of the iceberg, Laura. I swear to God, this story gets fucking bizarre.
Nice.
More bizarre.
More bizarre than it already is. Hang on 1 second. I have to fix one thing. Okay, hold on. Sorry.
Yeah, for sure. Not a problem. Okay, she's back. Her computer almost died. So, Anyway, so once she recovered, she made a trip to Sackville, New Brunswick, to visit another of her sisters who was married. During the 2 weeks she spent in Sackville, neither her sister's house nor the Teed home experienced any strange activity. I did it again. Take the mouse off the fucking...
Oops, we're on top of shit right now, for real.
Right now? Always. Yeah, always. Before you know it, the camera will cut out. The drinking game will start anew. Right. Good God.
This is how we roll.
Yeah. So upon her return to the Teed cottage, she and Jane began sleeping in a different room, hoping that this might put a stop to the whole shenanigans. Instead, the activity actually got worse. So in addition to producing loud noises and hurtling objects around the house, the entity began dropping lit matches from the ceiling of their bedroom at night. A phenomenon which all of the family members had witnessed. I was like, lit matches? That's a neat trick. If it's her doing this,
right?
That is a neat trick. That's some fucked up shit. Yeah. So, on one occasion, when Dan, Olive, Jane, and Esther were in attendance, one of Esther's dresses, which had been hanging from a nail on the door, rolled up by itself, traveled underneath the bed, and burst into flames. Not great, because everything on the prairie was made of straw or and or wood.
Right.
So
yeah, I'm all fire bad.
Fire bad. Tree pretty, fire bad. On another occasion, when Olive and Esther were alone in the house making butter, a fire started in the cellar. Unable to extinguish the inferno themselves, the women went out into the street and frantically called for help. A stranger, whom they had never seen before, ran to their rescue, smothered the fire with a mat from the dining room. Without waiting to be thanked, the man walked out the door and up the street, never to be seen by the family again.
Well,
you know,
right place, right time, I guess.
It's the unsung heroes that tug at your heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the ensuing weeks, the ghost began to speak to Esther, although only she could hear it. Then, one cold winter night, because, you know, it's the prairie, it's cold in the winter, right. Everybody remembers Oregon Trail.
Right.
We have diphtheria.
I mean, that's right. Not going well.
Yeah. She's about to get dysentery.
Right.
And we have pretty much trashed the entire beauty that was my childhood. So one cold winter night, while the family was lounging in the parlor, Esther suddenly rose to her feet, a look of horror on her face, and pointed with a trembling hand to the corner of the room. "Look there," she croaked. Oh, croaked. Mm. Now frogs are involved. Mm. "Look there, can't you see it? My God, it is the ghost. Don't you all see him?" The other family members did not, however, see him. The ghost proceeded to speak to Esther, telling her that it would burn the house down unless she left that night. Although none of the other family members could hear the ghost, Dan Teed, over it by this point,
I'm sure,
didn't want to take any chances and asked a neighbor who had expressed great interest in the manifestations if he and his wife would take in his misfortunate sister-in-law. The couple agreed, and Esther moved into the neighbor's home that night. So, this poor girl, I'm telling you what. Several weeks had gone by without incident, and it seemed that Esther had finally ditched her invisible tormentor. But one day, while she was scrubbing the floor in her new home, the brush she was using disappeared from her hand. She told the lady of the house what happened, and she, the matron, and the lady's daughter subsequently searched for the brush in vain. As soon as they decided to abandon the search, however, the brush fell from the ceiling, grazing Esther's head. I have never heard of a haunting, poltergeist, possession case like this before. I've just never heard of anything like this before. So, discounting the incident, 6 weeks went by without any major mischief. Then mysterious fires began to appear in the house, and the man of the house, obviously not willing to run the risk of having his own house burned to the ground, asked Esther to spend her days in the pub that he owned. I'd be like, great idea. Let's go. So, Her, the article wrote it as Esther's peevish appendage apparently followed her to this new location. So now she has a vestigial tail. And it was probably brought on by all the pickle farts. So, I don't like pickles, so I don't actually know what those are like, but they can't be great. Esther, so much to the amazement of the patrons, this girl who everybody knew was now living in the pub.
Zane! What? Quiet!
Well, that was interesting. You were muted, and you unmuted yourself to yell at Zane, and now you're muted again. You mixed it up.
I got my button messed up.
Sorry. Yeah. Zane, quiet. Mm-hmm. That was perfect. I was like,
he's singing, howling something. I don't know, in the background. I can hear him. I'm like, dude, chill.
Zane, I can't wait to put that in the show notes. Okay.
You get to witness Laura yelling at her child.
Right.
How fun.
Okay, so where the fuck was I? Oh, right, okay. So in one of the more notable of these incidents, a small pocket knife belonging to the neighbor's son drove itself into Esther's back. When the knife was removed and given back to the little boy, because, okay, it flew right through the air again, and it inserted itself into the same wound.
Ew.
Uh-huh.
An ouch.
Right. First, right. Ew. Gross.
Right.
And then that probably hurt. My back is actually kind of hurting thinking about it. So now.
Old. Move on.
Well, I mean, we're not all 35, Laura.
Listen.
In the spring of 1879, Esther traveled to St. John, New Brunswick at the invitation of a certain military officer. During her 3-week stay in the city, Esther was visited by a party of scientifically minded gentlemen who developed a new method of communicating with Esther's poltergeist. After asking the entity a question, they would recite the alphabet and wait for the thing to knock at the appropriate letter, repeating this procedure until the entire answer was spelled out. That sounds tedious as fuck, but it also kind of...
It does. It sounds like a really shitty Ouija board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very early day Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
By this method, the poltergeist identified itself to them as Bob Nickel and claimed that it had once worked as a shoemaker. To the men's astonishment, the other spirits also began to make themselves known. Or no, not the other. Other spirits began to make themselves known.
Ooh.
One ghost identified herself as Maggie Fisher, while another called himself Peter Cox and claimed that he was a relative of Esther's who died about 40 years prior. Later on, three more mild-mannered spirits made their presence known, identifying themselves as Mary Fisher, who said she was Maggie's sister, Jane Nickel, and Eliza McNeil, as if there weren't enough players in this story. We're going to have a quiz on all of the characters at the end of the show, guys.
So it's not just Little House on the Prairie, it's Little Ghost House on the Prairie as well.
Right, yeah. On the largest
too
prairie.
Many people in a cottage.
Right. yeah. Laura Ingalls Wilder had no idea what she was getting herself into.
No idea. Night, night, John Boy.
That's the Waltons.
Is it the Waltons? Oh.
But, but as an aside, I loved Little House on the Prairie so much that when I got my first pet, which was a goldfish, I named it Laura from the books. Anyway, oh, my little goldfish Laura. Anyway, so after a peaceful 8-week stay with a particular family who lived in the Nova Scotian countryside, Esther Cox returned to Amherst. The manifestation resumed immediately, as powerful as ever. And at this point, I want to show a picture. Like, it's almost like a early political cartoon that was drawn about the situation and, like, everything that was going on. It's actually kind of funny.
Wow. This is kind of funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, you'll see, like, you know, the tape with the furniture is overturned. Everyone's like, oh, my God. But the funniest thing is the fucking cat and the dog on the ceiling.
That's what I was just going to say. That's like, it's funny.
Also, is the dog a little emaciated? I don't know as I like that.
No, it's just not chunky.
It's just not chunky. Yeah. Well, curvy dogs are the best. So.
Positivity.
Yes. We're not body shaming dogs. Sorry, guys. So, at this point, an enterprising American actor, of course, named Walter Hubble, who had just finished a theatrical tour in Newfoundland, moved in with the Teed family as a paying boarder in the hopes of documenting the manifestations. So it's from his subsequent writings that most of the details of the book titled The Great Amherst Mystery are known. So over the course of 6 weeks, Hubble was pelted with inanimate objects, saw household items vanish and reappear as if dropped from the ceiling, watched objects levitate, translocate, witnessed several fires break out spontaneously, and all of the antics had an air of mischief, as if the poltergeists were doing their best to annoy the guest and the family. Hubble noted that the ghosts refrained from their devilry on the Sabbath, though, which I thought that was interesting. You would think
that got a rest,
right? Yeah. Whew, it's been a busy week. We're gonna have to chill. Right. It just happens to be on the Sabbath.
I've been throwing so many potatoes. I need to take a break.
Some of these are really huge.
Mm-hmm.
Convinced that Esther was incapable of conducting the pranks herself, Hubble began to converse with the poltergeist using the same technique the Teeds had developed. The ghost accurately told him the time on his watch and guessed how many coins he had in his pocket. Hubble then asked the spirits the following questions, which they answered with knocks. Question, have you all lived on Earth? Answer, yes. Question, have you seen God? Answer, no. Question, are you in heaven? Answer, no. Question, are you in hell? Answer, yes. Question, have you seen the devil? Answer, an emphatic yes. So I'm guessing the knock was like really
super loud.
Super loud, yeah. So on June 28th, 1878, the Teed House resounded to the sound of a trumpet. I feel like you want to make a fart joke.
I don't. I think we're good on those.
Are you sure? Yeah. Okay.
I'm just. The trumpet. All right, go on. Trumpets happen.
They do. It's weird.
It's so funny.
Zane, be quiet!
They do in my fucking house. You would think that he has a goddamn trumpet. But
right? I really hope that that is not the instrument he chooses to play when he goes to school with a band. Because that's what Koi chose.
He plays piano. But he thinks he's an EDM master in his room, like, making sounds, and he has little concerts. It's actually really cute.
I mean,
it's like a techno party in his room. It's hilarious.
Maybe he's the future Tiesto. We don't know.
That's he might be. I'm all for it.
Right?
Do it.
Jennifer? No, my son's name is Koi. Whatever. Koi's uncle Jeremy and his wife Tracy are huge fans of Tiesto. And their little dog, their little chihuahua's name is Tiesto.
Oh,
and yeah, Tiesto's in all of their family Christmas pictures. So it's them, their son, and, you know, little tiny DJ Tiesto, doggy.
Cute.
Yeah. So the house resounded to the sound of a trumpet. The strident noise continued throughout the day. Fuck that. Fucking have the house. Burn it down. I don't care. Take right. her. I am out.
Deuces.
Yeah, until in the evening, a small silver trumpet fell from the ceiling into one of the rooms. Neither Hubble nor any members of the Teed family had any idea where the trumpet came from. Although Hubble later decided to declare his intention to donate the instrument to a museum, the fate of this object, to the best of the author of this article, their knowledge, remains a mystery to this day, which would really be very interesting to see. I think. Mm-hmm. Now, the manifestations increased in scope and intensity until that summer. It was decided that Esther Cox had to leave the Teed home for everyone's sake once and for all. Poor kid. Because, again, by now she's only 15.
Like, right? She just has shit luck.
But in the 1870s, like, that's practically an adult back then, you know what I mean? Like, they were already, like, going to be wed and what have you. So, now, with Hubble's professional help, because, again, American, Esther Cox embarked on a speaking tour. Attracting audiences. Yeah, yeah. Attracting audiences who paid to see her and hear her story. However, she was met with some hostile reactions, and after she was heckled one night and a disturbance broke out, the attempt was abandoned. So she did return to Amherst one more time. She worked for a man named Arthur Davison. But after his barn burned down, he accused her of arson, and she was convicted and sentenced to 4 months in prison.
Oh, shit.
You thought her luck was bad then. I mean, like, I told you it was going to get worse.
Sorry, Esther.
Yeah, sorry. So, but she was released from prison after only 1 month. So after this, the phenomena gradually ceased for good. And Esther Cox grew up. She subsequently married twice. She had a son by each of her husbands. She moved to Brockton, Massachusetts with her second husband. And, you know, lived out her life where she died on November 8th, 1912, at the age of 52.
Well, good for her.
Yeah.
Finally got better.
Yeah. So Hubble's book, which, let's take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the book, and that is the man. The Great Amherst Mystery, A True Narrative of the Supernatural. So his book was published in 1879, and it proved very popular, selling at least 55,000 copies. The Amherst case was also investigated by the British paranormal researcher, Hereward Carrington.
I'm buying it.
Hereward. I'm not going to, I can't.
Hereward.
Howard Carrington. Make that as American as I can. This gentleman took statements from surviving witnesses of the events in 1907 and published them, along with a detailed account of the case in 1913. Other researchers looked at the case more critically than Hubble. In particular, a Dr. Walter F. Prince, in the Proceedings of the American Society for Psychical Research. Now, we have talked a lot, or somewhat a lot, in this show about the British Society for Psychical Research. But apparently there's an American counterpart, which I think is really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a look and see if that still exists. So anyway, he had researched the case, and he had written in 1990, he made a detailed case for trickery by Esther Cox while in a dissociative state. There was also a play based on the story titled Guilty, the Story of the Great Amherst Mystery, was written by Charlie Rindress and premiered at Live Bait Theater in Sackville, New Brunswick in 1991. Now, remember, she did go and visit friends there back during the whole kerfluffle. In 2012, former Cumberland County Museum curator, wow, say that five times fast. Former Cumberland County Museum curator, Lori Glenn Norris, authored a book further investigating the mystery entitled Haunted Girl, Esther Cox and the Great Amherst Mystery. Now, in 2015, the book's publisher announced that it had sold the film rights for the book to a project led by a director of popular TV shows such as The Walking Dead and Better Call Saul. So I was like, well, this might be kind of good.
All right. That's
Heard no more about that, though. So, in 2019, the mystery was featured on the Dark Poutine podcast, which explores true crime and dark history. So, it has been suggested that certain aspects of the alleged paranormal events at Borley Rectory, which we did cover in episode number 80, sometimes dubbed the most haunted house in England, may be linked to the Amherst case, which I was like, what? This is interesting. Huh. The experience of... Well, so the experiences of the Foister family there in the early 1930s, in particular claims that writing appeared mysteriously on the wall, resembled events in the Teed household. And Reverend Foister had previously lived in Sackville, New Brunswick, and may very well have been aware of the case of Esther Cox.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, Laura, ladies and gentlemen, that is the Great Amherst Mystery. And the story of the possession or the haunting or the annoyance, whatever you want to call it, of Esther Cox. So, what are your thoughts?
That girl had some shit luck.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's weird that she dropped him from the ceiling. Like, I mean, some of it is pretty easily explainable, but I think it's very strange too that it was like a commonplace thing to go watch, like just go hang out at their house and like, hey, I heard you got a poltergeist. Like, I'm just gonna chill.
Well, yeah.
See what's going on. Like, it's just, you know, it's, I mean, to me, that's just quite odd that.
It is, but it's also the same time of life where people would go pack a picnic lunch to watch the latest prisoner be hung at the local prison.
Very true.
It was a very weird time to be alive.
Very weird.
I mean, this is a weird time to be alive, but that was exceptional. I'm kind of like you. I think I don't necessarily know as I buy all of it.
Kitten, yeah, I mean, what do you think? Like, they benefited, though? Like, the family didn't benefit, really. Like, mm-hmm. You know, she did some shows or whatever, but it doesn't seem like there was a great benefit to her, unless she just wanted to be weird, or, you know what I mean, maybe she's,
that's true.
Maybe she had a mental illness.
That could possibly be.
Yeah, that may be.
Yeah, poltergeist.
And psychosis and stuff.
Uh-huh, yeah, and I always tend to take poltergeist stories a little bit more with a grain of salt, simply because mm-hmm. a poltergeist is typically, nowadays, anyway, in the paranormal community, you always want to take a really close look at the members of the family and investigate a little bit more into the dynamics of that family, especially if you have teenage kids in the house, because it oftentimes does center on a teenage individual. Not that they're pulling pranks, not that they're what have you, but if you have a teenager in the home that is already sensitive and, kind of, has their radio frequency tuned a little bit more toward psychic abilities, it could be, you know, a situation of telekinesis, or it could be, you know, poltergeist is out of my wheelhouse. I certainly haven't come across that. We haven't gotten into that in my paranormal investigator training yet. But it is something that I always tend to regard as being very cautious and needing to know more about, simply because it could very well be, you know, explainable in a way. The waters are murkier, I guess is what I'm trying to say. The waters are a little bit murkier when it comes to a poltergeist activity. Mm-hmm. The Enfield haunting was another one where they were like, these things are happening, but they do have, you know, this teenage girl in the home, you know, a couple of teenage kids in the home, but the one girl, Janet, was the focus of all of it. And when she wasn't in the home, nothing happened. And when she was in the hospital, nothing happened. And it does make you wonder, like,
right. When she was super sick, nothing happened. And I think it also, since it both reminded us so much, of the sisters, right, who did the knuckle cracking and what have you. So,
yeah,
I think that also kind of speaks volume because it was about the same time, too.
Yeah.
So, so it's all in that time frame when this kind of stuff was just being brought to the forefront of society.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, more.
For sure. Yeah. So, I think it's an interesting story. I think our telling of it was pretty funny, and we could not have shit on more genres than we did in this episode.
We bring it 100% all the fucking time.
All the time.
We're gonna do it. Mm-hmm. We're gonna go hard.
1,000%.
We're not afraid of the
hard. We're not afraid of the hard investigative bullshit.
Right. 100% shit on everything.
Yes, and including our own podcast, even our own show.
100%.
I mean, like, look, we're just going to do this. We're going to, it's going to be great. Look, there's her kitchen back there. No, sorry, I need to cover that back up. She hasn't cleaned her kitchen.
It's not that bad.
Quit talking shit about my kitchen. Yeah, so that is that on that. We, as always, guys, if you like the show, if you don't like the show, if you don't like the show, we don't really care. But if you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast stations. If you're not watching us on YouTube, if you're on YouTube, subscribe, hit the little bell, do the little thing. I'm not really sure what the fuck you do. Leave a comment. Just do all the things. You can certainly follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and the Twitter at HOAH Podcast. We are, of course, on the TikTok, HOAH Podcast, HOAH Carrie, HOAH co-host Laura. And before we go, we are going to talk to you a little bit about strange history, as if tonight's story wasn't strange enough. Let's see here. Laura.
Yes, darling. Please tell me everything.
Let me tell you everything. We're going to talk about some more ghosts. This is Strange History, the book that Jennifer gave me for Christmas. And so we do that.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. It is it's been a real source of hilarity. So, let's see here. We're going to talk about some ghosts. The first one is about Lizzie Borden in Fall River, Massachusetts. I'm not going to go into great detail about it. If you want to know, there's any number of shows, and our podcast did cover it in the first 15 episodes. I can't remember which one it was. But the house where she supposedly notoriously murdered her parents with an axe is home to a ghost. Is it Borden herself or one of her parents? Nope. It is the ghost of the family cat. Locals say the invisible feline is friendly. It likes to rub up against tourist legs and sit in their laps, which I did know. And I feel like if you're going to move into a house that's haunted, it will be haunted by cats, just like with Archie. Now, at the Vanderlip Mansion in Palos Verdes, oh my God, Carrie, like you didn't grow up in Arizona your whole life, in Palos Verdes, California, legend goes that Mrs. Vanderlip killed her entire family, including the dogs, ew,
bitch,
and then committed suicide. At night, witnesses have reported seeing the faces of the family staring out of the windows. The dogs run around and bark at squirrels in the woods behind the house. Oh, I hate that story. I hate it. I hate it. The Hardee's in West Union, Iowa, was built on top of a 19th century cemetery, and now ghosts can be seen at the fast food restaurant. Employees claim that they have seen objects move and can hear their names being called when nobody's there.
Weird.
Weird, yes. For those of you who don't know, Hardee's is the same as Carl's Jr. It depends on the part of the country you're in. Here in North Carolina, we have Hardee's. Back in Arizona, we had Carl's Jr. So there is the Radisson Suite Hotel in Ogden, Utah. A ghost named Mrs. Eccles haunts the elevator. She died on the fifth floor, the story goes, so the elevator always stops there, whether anybody has pressed that button or not. You can't see Mrs. Eccles, but when she walks past, you can feel her brush against you, and you can smell her perfume. That's common. That's common for a female. Yeah. So late at night, the duck pond in Lithia Park in Ashland, Oregon, emits an eerie blue light. It flickers for a few moments and then disappears. According to the locals, the light is that of a ghost girl who was murdered at the pond in 1875. I don't know if they have that, what is that, blue plankton that, like, colors the beaches at night in certain countries. I don't know if that's...
The hell is that?
Photoplankton? No.
Bioluminescence.
Yes, thank you. Photo. How did we go from photo to bioluminescence? But yes, that's...
My brain.
Special. She's got a special brain.
Yeah.
But yes, that's that. I don't know if that would be in a pond. I don't... Or if that's just ocean or... I don't know.
I am not an expert. The only times I have heard about it, though, is as far as I know, have been in an ocean, but I am far from able to tell you if it could happen in a pond or a lake of some kind.
Okay.
I don't know.
We'll get back to that. We'll research that and get back to you. Probably not anytime soon, but
we're not going to research
it. Next time
we're not going to tell you. She's lying. We're absolutely not going to.
That's not happening.
We're just happy we can remember what it's called.
Yeah. And by we, she means her. Because I still was like, photoluminescent plankton? I don't
something.
Know. Something.
Something. Yeah. Google it.
Although this last one, Laura, we are going to have to go and investigate while I'm there in December.
Nice. What?
Yeah. We got a lot to do that weekend. But
I know. I'm all, you keep piling it on. But sure, look, we both have time for everything.
Everything.
Everything you want to do.
In the desert outside Anthem, Arizona, the ghosts of Native American warriors on horseback have been seen riding at night. And if they see you, they shoot ghost arrows at you.
One, that sounds kind of awesome. Two, there's also outlets there, so maybe...
Christmas shopping. It is the first weekend of December. We've got shit to do.
Two birds, one stone. We can do this.
Multiple arrows.
Do I get a discount?
Right. So yeah, guys, that was that on the strange history, the Great Amherst mystery, and let's see if this one will work. Hey, it does. Hey. I never know if our overlays are going to work. So we definitely want to say thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for watching. If you want a hoodie, let us know. We're going to probably put that pre-sale up in about a week or two. for a month, see how many we can get.
I love
in
the honesty that we have going on today. It's really good.
It's refreshing. Good. It's refreshing.
Mm-hmm. It is really.
It is. So yeah, we want to thank you as always. And do you have anything to say in closing, Laura? We've got a double recording this weekend, and I think we're recording almost every night next week.
Yeah, next week is gonna be rough. I also have to fucking move. And I did get my Halloween costume, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's going to be exciting. We are recording next week's episode because we're recording on Friday night. This episode drops tomorrow morning. And then Sunday, we are recording next week's episode and our Halloween episode, which I know Laura's costume. It is amazing. Mine is a lot of fun, although, of course, it is very makeup heavy, so I have to practice that. And the story is going to be really cool too. It was Laura's idea, and I was like, that's brilliant. So
it's yeah, we have a lot of fun stuff coming up. So
yeah,
keep listening. Basically.
Basically keep listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We're great. We're only getting better.
We're only getting better all the time. To that end, we are going to leave you here, folks. And as always, Laura, tell them stay safe out there because you never know who
or what
is listening.
Is listening.
Yay. Yay. Bye, guys. We love you.
Bye.
Have a wonderful day, night, morning, whatever. You know.
Enjoy yourself.
Just, you know, bring yourself joy.